there's been different stages, and the failures look differently in my first 5 years versus my last 5 years.
Welcome to the Insurance Refocus podcast, where we're highlighting real agent stories and how they are innovating to respond to the changes and challenges happening in the independent insurance industry. My name's Lindsay, and I can't wait to introduce you to my amazing co-host who just so happens to be my mom, Carrie Wallace. Mom, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Lindsay. How are you doing today?
I'm doing really good. I crushed, absolutely crushed my workout today. It was, I don't know if anyone's listening has ever gone to an F45, but my boyfriend Patrick and I have been going 3 days a week in the morning at 6 a.m., which is new for us. As we started the new year, we decided, all right, 3 days a week, we're going to start going. And it's tough to get like back into working out, especially at 6 a.m. So today was one of those days where I was like, you know what? I freaking crushed it. So I'm really happy about that.
I love hearing that, Lindsay. It is a hard thing, but you know what? We've got someone on the podcast today that can talk about discipline until he's probably blue in the face.
Oh, yeah.
He's the guy that runs, I don't even know how many miles, but I think on his off day, he's still running 1 mile. So it is my pleasure to welcome Chris Paradiso of Paradiso Insurance to join us today. And I'm sure you got a lot to say about Lindsay getting up early and working out, right?
I'd like to get her cell phone number and I'll get her up at 3:30 and she will feel dynamic by noontime. If she feels good getting up at 6 and crushing it, I promise you, we'll get you up a little bit earlier and you're going to feel so freaking good that you can't possibly have a bad day.
See, the 5:15 wake up call for the 6 a.m. class is a little early for me. So the 3 a.m. might be a little much, especially I've seen your videos. You like run in the rain and the snow. I don't know that that life's for me yet.
That's what makes it great, Lindsay. You know why? You know why? What makes you feel really good is when you look around and your competitors aren't up. Your competition's not there. And I know somebody's going to throw back, well, your only competition is you. Exactly. It doesn't feel good getting up and getting out of bed at 3 or 3:30 in the morning. But you're doing it for a reason. So I will encourage you, move that, you know, go to bed a little earlier and move that a little earlier in that darkness. My dad always said, greatness doesn't come under the bright lights. Greatness comes in the dark when no one else is up.
I'm really not looking forward to the time change because it will, how will it go? Because it's going to get lighter later.
Lighter in the morning.
Yeah.
It'll get better. Okay. So that'll be fine with me because I do like when we finish our workout and it's still dark out. That makes me feel really good when it,
yes,
I like
it does.
That.
Doesn't it? There's something that runs through my veins when it's
So Lindsay, when I got to visit Stafford Springs and see where Chris runs his hills, I was like, oh wow. And then I think, how many times do you do it, Chris? I don't remember the number, but it's like,
well, I have a whole system, but on a bad day we do 5. On a good day we do 35.
Yeah.
So there's this, my boyfriend is from Vermilion, Ohio. And which is like a small little town, North Ohio on Lake Erie. And they love to ride their bikes everywhere in the summer. Like they try not to use cars when they don't have to, which is so fun. I like it. But they go on like this exercise bike ride that goes up a giant hill. And I'm absolutely terrified to do it. I refuse every single time because it's so big. I feel like I would be going up it and not have enough momentum and start rolling backwards. And I literally have nightmares about it every time I go, because every time they go on this bike ride, they're like, please, Lindsay, come. I'm like, no, I can't. Like, I'm too scared. I can't do it.
Just go sideways. You won't fall down sideways.
Yeah, go like this. Momentum going like this. And then it'd take me forever.
That's okay.
I don't know about that one. Maybe I'll do it this summer. That's a good idea. Going
you
sideways.
Should.
Not maybe.
We'll see. We'll see.
Do it.
You will do it this summer.
That's a lot to that's a lot to commit to on a public forum.
You just committed.
I hate to break it to you. You did.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. This is so funny.
Well, let's get into it, right? Let's get into this, Chris. So for the people who don't know you, which I don't know if there's people out there that still don't know you, but let's just on the off chance, if someone has not heard of you, can you give me a little bit of like, why was insurance the place you decided to build your career? What drew you to insurance?
So, most people, whether they know me or not, I grew up at the age of five. I started going to basketball camp. So basketball was very entrenched in me. I look back and never sent my son to a basketball camp at the age of five. Couldn't handle it, but very different types of kids today. But I'm not sure I handled it very well. I remember crying, right? But so basketball led me to be an extremely competitive person. So as I went through eighth grade and was going into high school, my father was a prosecutor, and he had helped out some very influential African-Americans that were in a very, very poor area in Hartford. And because my dad was pretty competitive, I was extremely competitive. He gets me introduced. So I start playing and tried out and made, fortunately, an all black basketball team. And we went to all black tournaments. So yes, I was the one white kid going to Canada in an all black tournament. And what it did for me is it made me extremely competitive, number one, but it also gave me a whole different culture coming from Stafford Springs, right? It's 85% Italian, right? Very few blacks, very few Asians. I mean, it's not diverse.
It's just not diverse.
No.
Yeah.
So it helped me really to diversify, but what it helped me probably the most was an attitude of gratitude. So inside of that basketball area, which was very run down, we had a pool table. So Chris Paradiso never played pool with sticks because they weren't allowed to have sticks because they were weapons.
Makes sense.
So I learned hand pool. So we always played hand pool when we went early. So when I say the attitude of gratitude is because there was lifestyle was so different there, that it changed the way I looked at a lot of things. And that really molded me. And what ended up happening was going into my senior year, another white kid tried out and he made the team. So now there was myself and one other white guy on the team going to all black invitationals. We were roommates. They put us together. So my dad and his dad ended up becoming friends. He was in the insurance space. His family created what is called the financial needs analysis, and he patented it. So very, very, very wealthy, beyond wealthy, in the hundreds of millions of dollars. He said, when you graduate, this was going into my senior year, when you graduate college, come see me. I think you could do really well in insurance. That was the actual second time I heard about insurance. I was 8 years old. My dad, one of my dad's closest friends, Raymond Daydahl, very good friend. You actually assisted me and learned about my story when he started Talon County Insurance that I ended up purchasing because he had passed away. The son passed away. So he told me when I was 80, he would take me fishing. And he said, kid, you're going to be a good insurance guy. And I remember that. But it was really when I got into high school, this father who was very successful in insurance space, very successful. I mean, he has one of the most prestigious universities in Connecticut. The pool is named after him. That's how much money they donated. So they were very wealthy and very well connected and very successful. But when I graduated, I called him. I was transporting prisoners. I worked within the sheriff's department.
Oh my goodness.
And we sat down at Paul's Pizza and he said, I'm going to help you get interviews. And I'm going to give you four names, four companies, four direct people to communicate. But he says, I'm going to tell you, there's a good chance you're not going to make it. That's why I wouldn't even look at hiring you. And I'll never forget the way he looked at me. He had no faith in me of ever making it. He says, 99% of people that start in the life insurance industry fail in the first year. And it's, if you make it 3 years, then you might have a chance. If you then make it 5 years, you got a pretty good chance. But that first year is almost a 99% failure rate. So I'm a, as you know, Carrie, that's gotten to know me, I'm extremely competitive. I still remember his voice. I still remember the way he said it. And I'll never forget it. 7 months into it, I took my mom to Rocco's Pizza in Manchester. And she says, well, why'd you call me? And you said, I needed to have lunch today. And he said, because I really hate this. I hate selling life insurance. And she looked at me and she says, you think you can stick it out? And I said, why do you say that, Mom? Because you don't quit very well. You're kind of a poor loser. And if you quit today, you're going to have some massive regret. And all I'm going to say to you is, why don't you stick it out for a couple more weeks? And we'll meet back here in a couple weeks. And I'll never forget the conversation with her. I left there saying, there is no way in hell I'm going to quit, even though I hated it. So here I am today, sticking it out. I actually love it and come to love it. But I will tell you, the first 5 years, I don't know of a day. Come Sunday night, I hated Sunday nights because I knew Monday I had to get up and do it. Then as I got into PNC and things started opening up, I come to love it. But the first 5 years, I don't know if I despised anything more than going to work every day.
How long did you do life insurance before you did both life and PNC?
About four years. Three and a half, 4 years. But even when I went into property and casualty, that year, year and a half, that first year, year and a half, I was still very heavily weighted on life and annuities. And I had a securities license. I had my 663 variable contracts, studied for my 7. I mean, I had a lot of securities licenses. So I was still doing a lot of that. Getting into year 5, 5 and a half is when I really started really focusing where it was more of an 85, 15, 90, 10, where I was more PNC than I was life.
So Chris, if I'm not mistaken, you built your agency from scratch, correct? Like this was not something.
Yes, ma'am.
And as a, you know, that's the fastest growing group of independent insurance agencies today. Like that is small agencies, scratch agencies, because of the movement from captive to independent because of M&A. There's a lot of people that are starting independent insurance agents. And I would agree with you. There's a ton that don't make it. There are. And there's also a ton that don't get above a certain size. So I would love for you, and that's not true for you. I mean, A, you're super competitive. Anyone who knows you knows that that's true. And as you were telling your story, Daniel Sung's voice was ringing in my head, just quit tomorrow. Or just one more day. Like that mentality will get you places. There's no two ways around that. But as you look back on your career, I think the biggest learning moments are failures. And we all focus so much on wins and how we're today. Like Facebook is full of wins. And it makes someone who's in a failure feel less than or feel really it just gives the false sense of reality. So I would love for you to look back and say, what are those failures that were monumental learning opportunities for you along your career?
First off, not just Facebook, social media is filled with a bunch of lies.
Agreed.
People are lying to you. People are lying to themselves.
That's right.
And at the end of the day, we have to look in the mirror and accept failure. Failure, has been instrumental in my life. Anybody that doesn't say they don't fail, they're 100% looking in the mirror and lying to themselves. So it's kind of like regret. I think regret is a superpower. When I challenged a good friend of mine, who's also my accountability coach, leave no regrets. You know, a lot of people say that. Leave no regrets. I would say regret is a superpower because it's like failure. If you learn from regret, it is a superpower. It's like failure. I always tell my kids, we win or we learn. We don't fail. So the failures, as I was discussing with you earlier, I think there's been different stages and the failures look differently in my first 5 years versus my last 5 years. But there is one big failure from day one. And I think a lot of us have it, not all of us may want to admit it, is ego. Ego gets in our way. And our ego tells us we're good all the time. And we're not. So I would tell you, ego's been the biggest thing in the last 10 years. You need to find a way to really limit your ego. Let's start with the first 5 years, though. I would tell you the first 5 years, coming raw, meaning starting from scratch, I am mentoring a couple agents that I know, Carrie, you know one of them specifically out of Texas. There's a couple of them out of Texas. What I would tell you, one of my biggest failures was not reading enough and understanding the industry enough. And what I mean by that is, if you're in your first 5 years, you should be looking to purchase. One thing I learned about this industry, size matters in an enormous way, because size, and if you don't want to grow, then I would tell you in the first 5 years, my other biggest failure was connectability within the industry. Relationships matter in this industry. Invest in carrier reps. Try to figure out who's up and invest in other agents. Don't look at us as competitors. Find other agents that are doing it better than you. Check your ego at the door and ask them. My mentor, unfortunately, he didn't get to me in the first 5 years, but he said, you got to commit to yourself every single year, 2 agency visits. And the number one thing you're going to spend time gathering information is their failures and what they learn from their failures. Because if you can learn from their failures, everybody wants to talk about the wins and how they win and how they did it. Rather, learn from their failures and why they failed. You'll have massive more wins. So I would say those are the 2 biggest things, is investing in people, not so much clients, because a lot of us are investing time in clients. But did we invest time in the industry? Meaning, did we invest time with carriers and relationships? And did we invest time with agents and making relationships with other agents? And I know from when I started to today, I think agents are much more open to helping and assist in mentorship than they were back then. I'm not making excuses, but that was my own fault in the first 5 years.
So let me ask you then. So when you first started, were you more of a heads down, I'm working on my business, I'm not paying attention to what's around me? Yes. And what did it do for you when you, because listen, you might be one of the most connected people I know. Like you truly, your people describe you as their mentor at this point in your career. But it's funny that when you first started, that wasn't what you were doing, where you were building those relationships. What flipped the switch and made you think to pick your head up, look around, get involved? Like what caused that change in you?
2008, I was at the Breakers speaking, my first speaking engagement. And I won't say the agent's name, but he's been instrumental from a distance. He looked at me afterwards. We had some private moments and he says, you could be one of the most talented insurance agents I have ever met. But if you continue the way you're doing, nobody's ever going to hear of you. You are going to have no impact on this industry. You work in the business, not on the business. And when you take your head and pick your head up, you're walking with your head down and you don't see anything around you. That's exactly what he said to me. And he says, if this conversation means something to you, I'm going to hand to you my cell phone number. You call me and I'll explain the difference between in and out. And I will show you a 7-minute layout of how you're going to change that. I called him that night. An agency out of Florida, agency owner. He changed my life because he was brutally honest. David Goggins honest. If anybody knows David Goggins, brutally honest. And literally laid it on the line. And he punched me right in the nose. But I'm going to tell you, I took it to heart. And I said, you know what? I'm changing my life. And he changed my life with his very harsh words. But they were real. It was reality. And I was fortunate enough that I listened to him and I took it to heart.
You know, I think that gaining perspective on what other people are doing just saves you the time of repeating things that didn't work or learn. You can just learn so much from other people and what they're doing and what works, what doesn't work. You can pick and choose. Like, I'm not saying you need to do, there is no cookie cutter. There's no two ways around that. But man, the amount that you can learn from other people's experiences, both good and bad, are life-changing. No two ways around that. So you said one other thing, which obviously in the line of work that I'm in, I want to dig into a little bit. But you said in the first 5 years, if you're not looking to buy, you're making a mistake. And but see, there's so much more to that, Chris. You can think you want to buy, but you have to be financially ready to buy. You've got to be mentally ready to buy. You've got to build something that allows you to have the capacity to buy and integrate to agencies. So talk a little bit about that. You've done some acquisitions, but that's an easy statement, but it's that's actually super deep what you just said. And it takes a lot to get yourself there.
Yeah. I would challenge the way you said be financially ready. My question to you, if you're okay with me flipping the question. When you were preparing that you wanted to have children with your husband, were you financially ready?
Oh, Chris, you know the answer to that question. You're never ready. Like, nobody, you're never ready. Yeah.
You're never ready. So I challenge the way we think about that, right? So,
but I would say this, hang on. I will say this. Like, I don't know that I would have said, hey, today's the day that I'm financially ready, but I believe that Kevin and I lived our life in a certain way that allowed us to have more options than someone who maybe didn't. So to answer your question, and I think that's
mentally ready.
Yeah. But also, you know, Kevin was commission only. His job was volatile at the time. Mine was the steady one. I actually made more money at the time. So financially ready is kind of interesting for us. We lived on one salary because of the volatility in his income. Meanwhile, he has been and will continue to be the biggest breadwinner in our house for a very long time. But I think the discipline of saying, we're going to live on one income because this one's super unpredictable, kind of like I'm not going to live on my contingencies. I'm going to live on what I know and what I can predict, allowed us to, once we got to the point where we had a child, to contemplate, can I stay home? And the answer was yes. Thank God I was able to do that. But had we lived on both incomes, that would be really difficult to back away from. And so financially, listen, there's never a perfect time, but the discipline you have, a financial discipline, will give you more opportunities, is really what I meant by that.
You answered the question perfectly as I was going to say it. So you actually, where I was diving with this is it has nothing to do with financially. It has everything to do with discipline.
Yeah, yeah.
Because was I financially ready to purchase an agency? I had still had to use a bank. That loan was, you know, $20,000 a month. Mm-hmm. That didn't feel good.
Right, right.
How many people wake up knowing they got a $20,000 loan a month? Not including the staff you're taking on, the location, the rent, you know. So I just challenge, I agree with you, but I think it's less financial and it's more discipline. Are you mentally ready, number one, and are you disciplined? You were disciplined. I wasn't financially ready to have kids, and then I end up with twins.
Yeah, you did.
Who's financially ready for twins? Unfortunately, you know, I'm not a Rockefeller. So... what you do is you get mentally ready and mentally disciplined. And that is why I'm challenging people in the first 5 years to say, hey, when they tell me they don't have money, I tell them that's okay. We can find money. But are you ready mentally and are you disciplined enough? Are you ready to be a leader? Because as you buy agencies, that is the key. Are you ready to lead? Are you ready to take on? Are you disciplined? So that was one portion. What was the other part of the question? I'm sorry, Carrie.
I think I said, basically, you have to prepare yourself in order to be able to buy. And you also, like, for instance, I get it. You maybe you didn't have the money to pay for it outright, but that bank had to be okay with lending money to you. So you ran your business in a way that a bank felt comfortable lending the money to you. So I think,
do you know why, Carrie?
Why is that?
Relationship. Mm-hmm. He's still my banker now. He's now a president of a bank. And he literally said, I've never done premium finance. I got him to work with me with premium finance. And he never funded an agency purchase. You know what he's funded for me? Many agency purchases with partners and without partners. So it's once again, reverting back to relationship. Now, he ended up becoming a state rep. He then ended up becoming a vice president. And now he's the president. And it's amazing on how that relationship said, I'm not worried about what you have personally. I know the kind of guy you are. You are going to pay it off. So on the first one, I got paid. I had a 5-year loan. I paid it off in 2.5. On the second one, and they were small. They weren't, I'm not going to, certainly not, it was hundreds of thousands. It wasn't millions of dollars. The second one, he says to me, I'm going to have a little problem because I see your personality. You love to pay things off. So can you keep this loan for at least 3 years? Because we need that interest. So once again, we did a 5-year, paid it off in 3 years. And this last one, we did a 7-year because it was larger and we're on pace to pay it off in 4 years. And he said, you know, I'm going to waive the 5 years. And I said, hey, 4 years, especially with interest rates going up. He says, I'd love for you to pay it off because I could take that money and lend it somewhere else. But 100% came from relationship and somebody believing in me. Yes, I invested time, energy in going to lunch and he comes to Flag Day every year and he brings his staff to Flag Day. He supports us on going into communities and giving bikes for the children. We become extremely close. Relationship.
How do you think that ego plays into buying an agency and that whole process? Because you just said earlier in the podcast that ego is one of the biggest mistakes that agents make early on in their career.
It is.
I could see that really negatively impacting buying another agency.
Yes. I have a very close friend. He said to me that when I was buying the largest agency, he said, Chris, I'm going to share with you that you asked me a very important question. He looked me in the eyes. He says, this is so important. You listen to me right now. You asked me the biggest failure that you did on this purchase. And he was going back a few years. My name. It had my name. And when I changed the name, when we purchased it right away, you know what happened? People left. You know why? Because they loved the other agent and his name was on the board. So he said, please listen to me. You have a wonderful name in your community, but remember their community when you purchase them. Be respectful. Check your ego at the door. And I will say, when I bought that agency, we kept that name and we have for almost 3 years now. And I'm going to tell you something, we can start transitioning now. But that was invaluable. And I look back and I would have done the same thing. I would have done the same thing. Oh, just move it to Paradiso. Everybody knows Paradiso. No. That's our ego telling us that we're that important. We're not that important.
You know, I have a really good friend, a really good agent in Ohio that's done multiple acquisitions and that he has almost no ego. I'm telling you, this is one of the most humble people I know. And what's funny is so many people don't even know he's the owner of some of the agencies in the small towns where he.
I know who you're talking about. It's one of the best agency owners I've ever 100%. Met in the country. Yeah. And people should know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's just interesting how when you check your ego, how much further you can go. In fact, the conversation with him is, most people are looking for acquisition opportunities. Acquisition opportunities find him because of the way that he handles them. It's just an incredible story. So I agree with you. I think ego gets in the way of a lot of things. There's no question.
My ego got in the way. I'm not going to sit here and tell. I could tell you 100 times my ego got in the way, and it my own fault. Got to look in the mirror and say, hey, you know, my dad used to reiterate. I'm almost done with my book, but. He always said ego stands, you know, everybody has an acronym, edging God out, EGO, edging God out. It's simple.
So let me ask you, Chris, one of the most challenging things I think, in being an agency owner, a leader, just in general, is managing and leading people. Inspiring people to be the most that they need to be or can be or don't even think they can be. But it's a skill set that's not the same as being a great salesperson or being a great relationship. It's really, you have to transfer what you know to someone else to make them better and meet them where they are. Give me an example in your career where maybe there was a failure in that space that you learned from.
I mean, there's been so many. You know, as a leader, when you run an agency, and then when you run an agency with your name on there, I think that also adds into sometimes ego. So I would tell you, hiring was number one. I think when someone challenges you or you feel challenged because somebody is smarter than you, I can tell you early in my career, I didn't hire people. I was not a good leader, number one. And I actually made a video, if you want to look it up, it's really terrible. But I made a video in 2010 on how I was a terrible leader. You can look it up on YouTube. It's still there. And how I allowed specific staff to come in late, not show up. All these actions where we as leaders will show up on time. No, that's not the way. When you allow somebody to show up late and you allow bad behavior, that's a leadership problem. It may be a person problem, but you should have nipped it in the butt from day one. I actually created a video and said I was a terrible leader. I allowed this. And what I ended up doing is realizing that I needed to help find them another job. And I got rid of my whole staff in 2010. And I started from scratch. And I looked in that video and I said, it wasn't them, it was me. I was a terrible leader. I couldn't fire them because if I fired them, I would have to, in my opinion, I'd have to have cause. I should fire myself. And that's what I did. I helped them find different positions. They all got different jobs inside of agencies, which I assisted them in because I felt obligated because of my poor leadership. And I started the first hire is Stephanie Finelli, who's still with us today. And what I did is I started realizing, which I think a lot of us in all leadership forms, including parents, where we fail at is we need to look in the mirror and it starts with us. We need to invest in leadership. We're never a good enough leader. So one of the key things that I started doing was reading. At this point in my life, I read a minimum of 2 hours a day. I spend about 5 months a year and I do 2 hours a day every single day. I don't believe in days off. And I know that's a whole different story. A minimum of 2 hours a day and 5 months out of the year is leadership books. And I work on me. And what I learned about that is the more selfish I become in becoming a better leader, and selfish is vitally important because if I'm not more selfish, I can't become a better leader. And I think we think of selfish as being negative. I'm talking about selfish as in, you know, I get up at 3:30 in the morning. I'm out the door for a reason because I know I need to get my workout in and I need to get a minimum of 2 hours of an audiobook, a minimum of 2 hours, right? So I'm selfish because I'm trying to work around, you know, my family's schedule. But I also know the most important thing I do every single day is work on the most important muscle, which is your mind. It's the least used muscle. When we think about working out, what are all these, I call them muscle heads. They go to the gym and they want big muscles, but they don't ever work on the most important muscle, which is in between our ears.
You know, I think another way that a lot of people work on their muscles has my approach on their brain muscle, I should clarify, is to surround themselves with other people who are like-minded, who are trying to grow in the same way that they are. But in a day and age where everything is digital, online, that like becomes really, really hard. What advice would you have for someone who is trying to build relationships, but everything's online?
I like really hard things. So I'm a little weird. I love the question. I'll give you an example. When we go to, if I take my kids and you could interview them without me ever being around, including a basketball game, wherever we park, we always park the farthest away.
Okay.
I don't care what parking lot it is. We park the farthest away because we have to earn our way. So I would say it's the same thing. I can't tell you how many people. I had a guy call me up 3 weeks ago. And I said to him, what I'm going to give you is I'm going to give you an hour. And we're going to see how committed you are. If you're this committed, reach back out to me. I'm going to give you 2 weeks. Reach back out to me. And I'm going to open my doors for you to come to my agency in for 2 days. He's from Texas. Who's coming Monday, flying in Monday, is this gentleman. Why? Because he showed me he's disciplined and committed. And the first thing he says is, I have a lot of issues. I need to fix these issues. And when you can admit you have issues, you are determined to get there. This guy was determined to get to me. He got to me. He got to me on LinkedIn. He reached out to me a couple times. I said, I am sorry. I'm in a deposition. Can you wait? Reach out to me next week. He diligently followed through. He diligently got my cell phone number. He diligently made sure I gave him an hour and that I listened to everything he said. And he said, I am going to follow through with you in 2 weeks. As your promises, I am going to prove to you that you're going to open your doors to me because you made that promise to me as long as I'm committed. And he did it. And I'm not going to tell you it's hard. He literally called me up last week and said, hey, I lost my number one person in my agency. She quit today. And I still want to come that Monday. I think it was February 5th. We fly in February 5th. We want 6th and we'll go 3/4 of a day on the 7th and fly out. Are you still good with it? I said, I'm fine with it. Are you still good with it? He says, no, but I have to make it happen if I want to change the direction of the ship because the ship isn't going in the right direction. He's committed. It's hard. You think it's easy? He lost his number one person in his agency. Of an agency of 9 people, the number one person who's been with him for 13 years, and he's still going to make the time to come. And I said to him, when you come, please just do me one favor. Have a clear mind. Everything will be fine at the office. Have a clear mind. Let's get focused. So I challenge people to do hard things. I try to do at least one hard thing every single day. One thing that anybody knows, Chris Paradiso, I despise close quarters. Despise them. So now what I've converted this since December is I get inside of my hot tub every single morning and I shut the cover and I have about that much space and I just relax and I breathe. It stinks.
Yeah, that does sound terrible. It sucks.
And it's if you are like me where you hate and you're extremely claustrophobic, I have anxiety getting up knowing that I'm going to do that, but I do it. Why? Because it's hard and fear is nothing more than what's in our head. Fear is 100% made up and hard work is stopped by fear. So I love hard things. You know, that's why I stayed in the insurance space because I couldn't quit. And my book actually has a whole chapter on things that we should quit in life. There's a lot of things we should quit. So when I hear never quit, I actually disagree.
Oh, I'm adamant about the quitting thing, just so you know. I mean, it used to really bother me that we have this culture saying that you can never quit. And here's the reason why. One of the people I admired most in my life is my dad. And my dad, my dad and my mom were high school sweethearts. They were married for 21 years. And I'll never forget him saying that he doesn't quit. He just straight up doesn't quit. But he was at a crossroads and my mom and my dad were not working out and they decided to divorce. It was her decision. And he was just like, I don't know how to deal with the fact that I'm going to be a failure in this part of my life. Do you know that that failure brought me the best gift I've ever had in my life, which is my stepmother?
I believe it.
Failure brings all kinds of things. You know, I felt the same way. I've left 2 jobs in my life. I left one because I became a parent and I left the other because I had a major health issue. And that transition has brought me so much And in all intents and purposes, that's a failure. I mean, it was not something I'm super proud of that didn't work. And there, it's part me, it's part the situation, it's part the people I was surrounded by, but that did not work. And I'm built like my dad. Like, that is a failure through and through. But boy, it brought a lot of joy and a lot of opportunity in my world.
Just think, Carrie, if you didn't quit.
I know.
Not only would you not be happy, what's the odds that you wouldn't have had even a more serious health? And now you're gone. That's why when we say, you know, no fear. That's the stupidest shirt I've ever seen. Remember?
Oh, agreed.
I mean, Lindsay, you're probably too young. You don't remember, but no fear shirts. Everybody wore no fear.
Like they just said no fear on them.
Then what are you doing? Staying in your house? No fear? I mean, that's the craziest. We have fears all the time. My wife hates spiders. She fears them. I say to her, it's this big. You're this big. You're huge.
Just what every woman wants to hear. You're huge.
Compared to a spider, Lindsay, come on, it's a spider.
You have to know Mary Alice, she's used to it, I'm telling you. Mary Alice can handle Chris Paradiso, that's for sure. And I'll tell you, Mary Alice and Morgan have a lot in common because Morgan hates spiders as well.
So
tell me, Chris, you know, you always give so willingly. There's just no two ways around that. If you had a piece of advice, if someone's just starting out, what would you tell them?
The number one thing I would tell them is research and find agents that you feel are successful that have a career in the direction you want to go. And I don't care what it costs. I would reach out to them. I would find them. I would invest time. I would fly to them if I had to, drive to them and say, kind of like what David Goggins did. David Goggins wanted to become a SEAL. He ends up tying in with this guy. And the guy says, yeah, why don't you come live with me? He lives on. He ends up being one of the toughest guys. What I would say is invest time in somebody that you feel is what they define as success for you. Like, I never want to define success for anybody, you know, but you say, hey, I want to have an agency like that person. And the number one question I would ask him is exactly what you asked me. What do they fail at? And can I learn about the lessons of each of those failures? Mm-hmm. Don't go in and say, you know, what are you winning at? Because, you know, the first 5 years, the first 10 years of my career, major epic failure. I didn't have processes and procedures like I have today. We're almost robots here today. Major failure, but I wouldn't put it the biggest failure. I would secondly, if they're just starting off, tell them after they did focused on that agency or that those people, I would say processes and procedures.
Yeah. For sure. Well, Chris, thank you so much for spending time with us today. I could talk to you all day. Obviously, I have talked to you for hours and hours on end, to be quite honest. So if someone's listening and they're like, okay, I got to know more, how do they reach you? Where do they find you?
I tell people to pick up the phone. I am, emails are for information. Phone calls are for communication. My cell phone is 860-836-1230. Pick up the phone, call me. If I don't answer, leave a message, text me. I will get back to you. I live my dad's life in the senses, as my father used to remind me, the most wealthiest woman to ever die that walked the face of this earth is Mother Teresa. She may have died with no money, like Gandhi, who died with 9 possessions, but they died the wealthiest people because of what they gave. The more you give is the more you get. So giving is very selfish to me because it makes me feel very good. And I love to see other people win.
Love it. Thanks so much for coming on, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the Insurance Refocus podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, please be sure to hit subscribe and leave us a review so you'll never miss us. Want to learn more about how Agency Focus can help you grow your agency? Head to agency-focus.com or email Carrie directly at carrie@agency-focus.com. If you need to get in touch with me, feel free to shoot me an email at lindsay@agency-focus.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you next week.